What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 123 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic podcast for you tonight. We are coming to you just a few hours after that wonderful Bungie stream that went to benefit Guardian Con and the kids at St. Jude's. So we're all hyped up on love and good energy and news about Lord of Wolves, and the Iron Banner is going, and I can honestly say for the first time in months, I am actually playing Iron Banner and not necessarily hating it. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk to you about. Well, at least we've got a couple of weapons we're going to break down for you tonight. We're going to talk about Gnora's Axe. We're going to talk about the Shining Sphere. We're going to talk about Truth, so two rocket launchers tonight. And, of course, we're going to talk about Lord of Wolves. So, that being said, let's get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing tonight, Kit?
Merc, doing fantastic, man. Can't complain. A lot to be excited about. I guess the one thing I can complain about is that work has just been killing me this week, and I have not been playing Iron Banner, and I really actually want to be. So that's my one complaint, but I'm going to try to fix that later this weekend. So we'll see how it goes. Fingers crossed, man. I've got my eye on Truth.
Yeah, I don't know what it is that has motivated me to play Iron Banner this time. I don't know if it's... I really want to get that quest done. I don't know if it's the fact that the best PvE grenade launcher in the game comes from Iron Banner. I don't know if it's the fact that Lunas and Not Forgotten are no longer absolutely running the console PvP meta. I don't know if it's the fact that I have Truth, which is my new favorite, you know, PvP exotic. I don't know if it's the fact that there's just a ton more people playing right now. But for the first time, I don't feel like I'm pulling my own teeth out when I'm stepping into Iron Banner. Which is a fantastic experience. And honestly, I had apparently either completely forgotten or never known that Iron Banner can be an enjoyable experience. So I'm really, really happy with that. Now, granted, I play on Xbox, you play on PS4. We know the PC players are having a little bit of a problem with the Lord of Wolves. The ultimate irony being that the Lord of Wolves is dominating the Iron Banner, an event famous for its, you know, wolf howls and, you know, Iron Lord stuff. So we did get some news because they hit a stretch goal on the Bungie stream today. They got some news about Lord of Wolves. And basically he said, look, we've got a patch coming in 2 weeks. We could put Lord of Wolves into, we could put a Lord of Wolves nerf into that patch, but we would have to take that patch out of certification, which is in right now. And we'd have to crunch to get it done and back in certification in a timely manner. And he says they don't really particularly want to do that if they can help it. This is coming from Luke Smith on the stream, actually. And so he said, more realistically, the patch will probably come out a little bit later in July, and they'll get it fixed. They said, on a positive note, it has taught them a lot about how much players need the ability to shut down roaming supers and how the roaming supers probably have too much damage resistance. He said the entire team as a whole is going back and tuning the damage resistance on roaming supers because Lord of Wolves is so popular because it has the ability to one-shot these supers that, you know, very few other guns in the game have that ability. Now, what I'm going to say is this is something we talked about on Twitter the other day. I am 100% in the boat that Lord of Wolves needs a change. On PC, it is 100% absolutely busted. It really, truly is. The lack of recoil there with mouse and keyboard enables you to get kills at distances that it legitimately functions like a pulse rifle that can one burst you. It's not healthy. It's not good for the game. It shouldn't be doing that. On console, not really a problem. The red reticle range where you have that really super active sticky aim assist is very, very short. The recoil is very, very bad. It's a good gun for shutting down supers at close range. But as someone who uses an Erentil, I have absolutely no problem with it. I myself run Lord of Wolves for a number of games. Holden and I were running him as a duo the other night and absolutely dominating with it. It's a good gun, but it's not the best gun. And what makes me giggle a little bit on the inside is listening to the people who were telling console players, oh, just deal with Not Forgotten, just deal with Luna's Howl. Mm-hmm. Now the shoe is on the other foot. And I'm not in return saying just deal with Lord of Wolves because I don't think they should have to. I think it should be changed. But it is funny to hear them demanding that Lord of Wolves be changed because now they're experiencing something that runa their meta the same way Luna's Howl and Not Forgotten did, you know, in ours. It's much worse. But don't get me wrong there either. Like, Lord of Wolves is much more broken than Luna's Howl and Not Forgotten ever were. Lord of Wolves on PC is like Promethean Lens level broken.
Yeah, so. It's pretty bad. But the good news is that it's also going to be very short-lived. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. And, I mean, really, what more can you say than that, right? Like, its day is here. Just, you know, embrace it, lean into it, or take a break and do something else. And in a few weeks, it'll get fixed. So,
You know,
you know.
it's when we're talking about a fix, I know what people are really worried about is the same thing that happened in Not Forgotten and Luna's Howl happens to Lord of Wolves, where it's not a problem in one sandbox, and the nerf that they decide to use on it makes it worse in the sandbox it wasn't ever a problem in to begin with. I believe there are ways that Lord of Wolves can be nerfed that will prevent it running rampant on PC, will maintain some of its strength and some of its power, and won't hurt it in PvE and PvP. And the one that I suggested is something that the gun already had back in D1. It had a hard range cap. Outside of, I think it was 15 meters, the bolts literally vanished into thin air. It did full damage up until 15 meters, and then it did zero damage outside of it. And we've seen this mechanic on Lord of Wolves. Not only that, this mechanic still exists in D2 because Acrius does it. Acrius does full damage up to, I think, 10 or 10 and a half meters, and then it does no damage outside of it. And that's what enables it to be so completely lethal anywhere inside of its range without that lethality bleeding over into making it too lethal at, you know, chaperone range where it's not supposed to be.
Right.
So this is something that we know that they can do. And the fact of the matter is, if you were to do that, it's not really going to hurt console because it's so difficult to use it. You know, good players can use it at the 15 to 20 meter range, but they probably really shouldn't be anyways. Like it's meant to be a chaperone level gun that has a little bit more stopping power but doesn't instant kill. Like that's where the range works out. That's where the range worked out in D1. That's where the range worked out in D2 before it was broken. And so I think if they were to do something like that, like they were to put a hard cap on it, I think it would be very, very simple. It would prevent a lot of the abuse you're seeing in PC, while at the same time, it's certainly not going to hurt PvE because PvE, it's a shotgun.
Right.
You know, nobody, even in PvE, people aren't sniping with Lord of Wolves. Like they're still just using it the way it's meant to be used. And on console PvP, it's being used for the most part the way it's meant to be used. And then you don't have to go, although I will say this, I was not in favor of the change that they did to it, but I misunderstood. I thought you were going to have to get a kill. You remember us talking about
Yeah,
this when we
yeah,
were
yeah.
discussing the change? We were like, are you going to have to get a kill to activate it? Because then it's going to be useless. And it was like, oh, there's no way that they're going to make it to where you don't have to get a kill to activate it. It can't just be active all the time. I was like, that would be absurd. Well, it was, and it is. So, you know, that way they can at least keep their kind of absurd change and they don't have to revert that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of had a feeling somehow that they were going to end up going that way, because making it get a kill would have been like too much. Like now maybe it's not quite enough to activate it, but I don't know if they really didn't leave themselves a lot of good middle ground. But that's neither here nor there. It is what it is now. Honestly, a range cap would be a perfect solution because they don't really have to do anything else. That just solves the problem with no additional changes, but we'll see what it is that they do. The thing I took away from this that I'm excited about is that they're looking at changes to damage resistance on roaming supers, and that possibly means that we're going to be looking maybe at more options for combating supers in the future. It also means that you're going to have to be smarter in the future with how you play your supers. You can't, you know, if your strategy is activate in open line of sight of six enemies, charge in, you're gonna want to, you know, maybe start practicing other
Yeah.
strategies. So
I'm very, very happy about that. No roaming super should ever have more than 50% damage resistance. I mean, it just shouldn't.
yeah, it's
Roaming supers need to cap out at 50%, and the only supers that should have more than 50% are the one shots, like Blade Barrage, like Thunder Crash, you know, like Nova Bomb, the ones that have a cast animation,
Yeah.
and that's the entire duration of their super. They're the only ones that should have more than
Tether.
50%. Yeah, tether, and even then, I'm not saying they need to have like 75%. You know, I think you can safely stick those at 60, and it will probably be okay.
Yeah.
But you know, Arc Strider, Sentinel, Striker, none of those should have more than 50%, because the number of times that I've put a full six, you know, probably six. I'm not going to say seven because I'm sure I missed one bolt, but a full six fusion bolts into a super and have it not even deplete their shield is just infuriating, absolutely infuriating. So Spectral Blades, of course, like, you know, if you want to give Spectral Blades 51% when they're invisible, and 50% the rest of the time, I'd be happy with that. I mean, roaming supers have been the bane of Crucible for ever.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, at this point, since D2 has been a thing, they've always had high damage resistance, and it was a mistake that should have been rectified a year ago.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see it. I mean, this was a lesson, I guess, that did not translate over from Destiny 1. In Destiny 1, when the Sunbreaker first came out, it had massive damage resistance, and it instantly healed. And everybody Titans loved it, right? But everybody...
Well, Titans had been shit up until that point. Yeah. That was the first time Titans got to run the Crucible. And they let it go on. I swear I believe this. They let it go on for a little bit longer than they probably should have.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time Titans got to feel powerful in PvP.
That's probably true. But point being, everybody else just found it infuriating. You heard the hammers activate, and you're like, well, fuck, I guess...
It's time to die.
Yeah, time to just find a corner and wait for them to blow me up. That got changed, and we didn't really see that kind of insanity as far as damage resistance in Destiny 1, as far as I can remember. People always complained about Blade Dancer, but... Hush.
Yeah. Well, Blade Dancer's problem was how magnetic it was.
Yeah.
That you could just spam attacks, and it would zap you to the nearest person, and there was nothing they could do about it. But,
yeah,
you know, it's... I mean, that's just what Spectral Blades is right now. My biggest problem in PvP are two not super highly utilized supers, but Dawnblade right now, with the insane duration and movement and tracking of those swords, is incredibly annoying to deal with. There is no way that you can kill a Dawnblade.
No.
If you see one coming at you. And even if you don't, because they can just throw them across the map and the swords track to you with incredible magnetism. And then Striker, if they keep getting kills, they're unbeatable because of their damage resistance. And as long as they keep getting kills, it just constantly refreshes their super. So, you know, I've seen people go on 5, 6, 7. I think the most I've seen is a 9-kill streak in their super in PvP, which is insane. And it needed some work. It was underpowered before. And I'm not saying it's like broken, because it's not, but it's edging on the point, if other things get brought down, where it's going to be comparatively. It happened with fusion grenades in D1. It happened with No Land Beyond. It happened with Icebreaker. It happened with Wormwood in the sidearms. There comes a point where you can see something is on the cusp, and if other stuff drops below it, it's going to roll over into meta almost immediately.
Well, so I think, honestly, I think with Strikers, if the damage resistance comes down, I don't think they're going to be a problem. I think anybody who can go on a 9-kill streak, if the damage resistance is pegged at 50%,
probably deserves
like
it.
they hardcore earned that, or they're just playing like way below their level in terms of opponents. As far as Dawnblade's a lot harder to do because it has so much going for it. You know, they can soar through the air, they've got these tracking range swords, they have a whole bunch of those swords, a lot of abilities going on, a lot of movement. I think lowering the damage resistance will be a big help, but I also think having Truth may be the counter. Is if the damage resistance comes down and Truth can one-shot them, I don't know if that's going to be the case, but if it can, Truth is a hard counter, as long as you see them first.
And if it can't, Wardcliffe still is, so...
Wardcliffe's a little harder to... I feel like it's harder to get them out of midair unless you've got the Catalyst finished, and even then... If they're anticipating that you're jumping at them with a Wardcliffe, there's a fair chance they're going to hit you with a sword first, because you're going to have to get at least moderately close with the Wardcliffe, or they're going to, you know, dodge and fly away, and you're not going to hit them enough. Now, I don't know, but the only real problem there is that we're still leaning on two exotics as the only hard counters to a Dawnblade. Team shooting them is ridiculously risky because they can whip those swords out so fast that you're asking, like, even if you do somehow take them down, you're probably handing them 2 or 3 kills, which was totally worth their life. Like,
yeah.
So,
I mean, shit, technically, if you get 2 kills in a super, you know, this is one of the things I preached back in D1, but if you pop your super and get 1 kill, that's still, you know, you still broke even.
Yeah.
One kill and you don't die. I would not want you to pop your super, get a kill, and trade. But if you get one kill and don't die, that's one kill up on the enemy. And I mean, one of the things that I see new players do is they just hold their super forever and all eternity, and that's not what it's there for. If you're holding your super, it means you're not charging your next super.
Yeah.
The thing that, one of the first things I learned that started to make me a good player, besides learning when to retreat, was burn the super. Burn the super fast. There were points in time in D1 where I was getting 5 supers a game and social because, you know, I would use my super the second I would get it, and sometimes I would only get one kill. But, you know, I would use it, I would stay alive, I would get the super, and I'd immediately start building my next super, and I would use it as soon as I got it. So, yeah, absolutely. If you're looking at it, like, you get, you know, you're team shotting someone, and he sacrifices himself, but he kills two of you, he still won that engagement, technically. So yeah. It is really hard to do that. But let's talk about some weapons. I think that's what everyone's here for. We saw the Menagerie episode was quite popular. We feel like that's the first breakdown we've done in a while. But we've got two weapons. Neither one of them are new. They're both being brought back, this time with random rolls. We've got Ghenora's Axe. It is a precision slug shotgun energy arc in specifics. Pros, I mean, natively, like all slug shotguns, granted, we only really have good bone structure to compare it to. That's the only other randomly rolled slug shotgun. But it's got really high range, really high stability, really high handling. Mag size, inventory, reload speed, all kind of average, and the aim assist isn't great. It's a little bit on the low side. The time between shots is a little under a second. It's 0.93 seconds. And it's doing 258 for a crit and 147 for a body. So two body shots, two rapid body shots will kill, or a single crit to the head. It's basically a poor man's chaperone. Now for perks. This is something that people have been pushing this around on Reddit. I'm not quite sure where it came from, although I think there was a video on YouTube that is the beginning of this, but people are saying that range doesn't matter. That range is a stat, doesn't matter at all. That as long as you have opening shot, it will max your range right up against the cap, no matter what range perks you have. Opening shot does provide a lot of range. It does provide a pretty sizable boost. However, if you were trying to hit the range cap without opening shot, say for example you get a swashbuckler roll or something, if you are trying to hit the range cap without opening shot, people keep saying, oh, it's pretty easy for you to hit the range cap. Range doesn't matter. Without opening shot, you pretty much need full bore accurized rounds and like half of a range masterwork to do that. So the range cap that I have not seen any gun get past is 12 meters on the Ghenora's Axe. That's the maximum distance, which is 1 meter less than the chaperone at 13 meters without roadborne. That's the most I've been able to see anyone, no matter what role they have. I've seen people with 100 range Ghenora's Axes with opening shot, and they've been able to hit 12 meters. However, I personally have a rifled barrel accurized rounds Ghenora's that was only able to hit 10 meters, did not have a range masterwork, did not have full bore, which is the highest range barrel, wasn't using opening shot, was only able to hit 10 meters. That's a heck of a lot of range still there.
Yeah.
Accurized rounds and rifled barrels like plus 18 on the range or something like that. I think it's plus 9 each. And I was only able to hit 10 meters. Now, if I'd had a range masterwork, I would have probably been able to hit 11, maybe even 12. When I got that same roll with opening shot, I was able to hit 11. But what I'm saying is that, and you know, I tried it at 12 and I couldn't get it though, is the thing. Like, maybe if I'd had a couple of points in a range masterwork, maybe if I'd had full bore instead of rifled barrel and accurized rounds and opening shot, I would have been able to hit 12. But I couldn't do it. Range is still important. Opening shot gives you probably a full meter, maybe a little bit more than a full meter of range on that first opening shot. But range as a stat is still important. And even if it wasn't to push the one hit kill distance out, it's still better for your aim assist at longer distance. It's still better for your accuracy cone to make the gun more accurate, right? Like there are a multitude of reasons why you still want range as a stat. And people are saying, use stability. Why? You have almost a damn second in between your shots.
Yeah.
Stability does not matter that much on this gun. Handling, yes, handling is pretty important. But, you know, you could just roll quick draw on trait one and you're like good to go. Like I don't see any of those things being more important than range, even if range doesn't, you know, even if you don't need full bore, accurized rounds, and a range masterwork and opening shot. That's probably overkill. You know, you could probably shave off full bore and go with something that gives you less range, like small bore or hammer forged rifling or rifled. And you could probably do accurized rounds and opening shot, and maybe not even a range masterwork, and you're gonna be like close enough. Right? Like you'll be fine. You'll be hitting like 11 meters, you'll be good. But range does matter. And this whole thing has like spun so far out of proportion that I saw on Shard It Keep It. It was like a dude had like barrel shroud and like tactical mag. And someone was replying to him like, yeah, don't worry, that's a great roll because range doesn't matter on these shotguns because they have a range cap. It's like, yeah, they do have a range cap, but that gun's not going to be anywhere near hitting it.
Yeah.
Like, yes, they do have a range cap, but you need probably, I want to say, if you don't have opening shot, I want to say you probably need 23, 24 points of range to hit the range cap. That's not a trivial amount, right?
Yeah, no, that's gonna take a full commit from your perks. You're gonna actually need a legitimate god roll. Now, obviously opening shot is probably your ideal perk to look for because it's gonna make that so much easier to do. And because you do have nearly a full second between shots, like mandatory. You should be planning to take a shot and then probably have cover or swap to a different gun. So you should be getting the benefit of opening shot every single time you pull the trigger. Unless maybe you're closing distance and you're taking a follow-up shot to get the kill. So strategy-wise, it plays a little bit different than some other shotguns because it does not fire quickly. You need to be taking that into account. But if you're playing around opening shot, I think that's easy to do. Take the shot, you either get, and swap immediately. You either got the kill, or you're cleaning up with a hand cannon or a pulse rifle or whatever you've chosen to pair. A sidearm, I don't know. I don't know what people do.
Yeah, I mean probably a hand cannon mostly because you can stick Icarus mods on both of them. This gun, if you get it with opening shot and you put an Icarus mod on it, is disgusting. It actually has what I would call superior in-air accuracy and makes it one of the few guns in the game that I think allows you to really take full advantage of the mobility that a lot of the characters offer. I highly recommend that mod. It is probably my favorite mod to put on it. An interesting role that actually Destiny Fun Police was the one who discovered this. Swashbuckler, I had a suspicion in my head that it may do this, but I didn't. I actually didn't think it would. I thought they were gonna like finagle the perk a little bit to where it didn't. But if you get a melee kill, you can then body shot up to like 8 resilience or something.
Wow.
It does like 196 damage to the body after a melee kill. So I'm not saying it's the best for every class, because obviously some classes have weaker melees than others. It's like, you know,
Hunters.
Titans have very strong melees.
Yeah.
Like shoulder charge. So here's my idea right here. I want a Ganor's Axe with Swashbuckler, and I'm going to use Heart of Inmost Light. So that every time I shoulder charge, I can either body shot someone with my Ganora's Axe or I can one shot sticky grenade them. And I'm going to love every single minute of that. And I'm very much looking forward to doing that in PvP. I think it's going to be disgusting and
You're the
infuriating.
worst.
And I'm really excited about it.
You're the
Because,
worst
you know,
person.
I mean, you're going to tell me that a melee kill, which is already a one hit melee kill, so I can hammer strike someone. Then I can one hit grenade someone, or I can one hit body shot someone with a slug shotgun with a range that if I max it out is 11 to 12 meters. Like, yeah, I think I can do that. I think that'll be fun.
Oh, you're the worst person ever. That's.
Yeah, it's awful,
It
isn't it?
is.
It's gonna
I'm
be
like
great.
speechless at how bad that is. I but at the same time, like I can't tell people to do anything but exactly that because yeah, I mean abuse it while it's there. Make people mad, get it nerfed.
Yeah. So, I do want to point out that this gun can roll with full auto. Full auto used to be a lot more than it is. It used to increase the rate of fire by 100%, so it doubled it. It only increases it by 10% now, so it's gonna shave, you know, a frame or two off of it. If you pair it with assault mag, I think you can actually get the time between shots down from 0.93 seconds to like 0.77 seconds, which it's a noticeable increase. Like you will feel that the gun is firing faster. So, you know, If, for example, say you get full bore in the barrel, you don't get accurized rounds in the magazine, but you get a salt mag, that's still good if you have opening shot. You know, that's still a good roll. Or, for example, in the trait one slot, if you don't get quick draw, but you get full auto, it's not a wasted perk. It's a slug shotgun. There is no penalty to, you know, the pellet spread right. like there is on the other full autos. It's absolutely worth having. So, you know, full auto, quick draw in trait one, opening shot or swashbuckler in trait two. I'm still going to go with a range perk in the barrel because, like I said, I just don't see the benefit of more handling or more stability on this gun. So full bore is the most, I think it gives like plus 14, hammer forged and extended barrel both give plus 9, small bore gives plus 7, accurized rounds in the magazine also gives plus 9. I think light mag gives plus 4.
Yep.
So, you know, with opening shot, you probably, with opening shot, you know, you could probably get away with like full bore and accurized opening shot and no range masterwork and you'd be good. Or if you had like small bore accurized and a range masterwork and opening shot, you'd be good. Like, I think you'll be capping at that. But you know, and again, I will say that this is on the one I tested. On the one I tested, had rifled and accurized, no range masterwork and opening shot. And I was able to get to 11, maybe a little past 11. I wasn't able to kill at 12. So, you know, your mileage may vary, but I will say that that was plus 17 or 18 points of range and opening shot, and I was still hitting 11.
So. I mean, I think the bottom line, the takeaway is that range does matter, and it's better to overshoot than to undershoot. In turn, like if your kill distance is important to you, if you're taking this into PvP because you want to be able to kill at the maximum range, that half meter can make the difference between you and somebody who thinks that range doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's not like it's ever going to hurt you to have more range.
Right? Yeah.
Like, stability and handling aren't important enough to where you're like, God damn, I really wish I had more stability on that shot. Like,
yeah.
There's almost a full second in between shots. Like, you're going to reset your aim just fine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if handling really matters that much to you, so quick draw.
Yeah.
Or, boom, you're good.
You've got armor perks for handling. You've got all kinds of options to work around that if that's what you need.
Yeah. And then there's also a kind of cool PvE roll on this. So if you throw on a pendon mag and triple tap on this, you can actually get, I think it's 10 shots in a row off if you've got a boss with a close range, easy to hit crit spot. So it kind of works like a sniper that you have to be standing right next to the boss to use. It's not like it's not going to be the highest level, high DPS gun. It just isn't. But for things like strikes and gambit, it's a pretty niche role that's kind of fun, especially if you're standing in like a well and you're getting the damage bonus or someone's like melting point of the thing. It's something to look out for. So you want a pendant mag, full auto for the increased rate of fire, triple tap. Then I would try to buff the stability on the barrel perks because you're going to be standing right next to the enemy anyways. It's PvE.
Yeah.
And stability just makes it easier to hit the crits. If you don't get a pendant mag, you can get a salt mag. You're going to have to slap a backup mag mod on it, though, in order to boost that because you need the magazine size to be 7 in order for you to hit that. So, you know, you shoot 3, it puts in another one. You've got 5. You shoot 3, it puts in another one. You've got 3. You shoot those 3, it puts in another one. You fired 10.
Yeah. Nice. I like that. All right, well, that's Ganora's X. I'm really glad to see that come back with random rolls. I liked the gun when they first brought it out, but it never quite felt right to me. And I don't even remember what perks it had on it originally, but... And I think a big part of why it didn't quite feel right for me is that I feel like I was comparing it to Chaperone, and I was just like, eh. If I really want to use a slug shotgun, this just isn't good enough.
It is 100% true that Chaperone is significantly better. I mean, the base range of Chaperone is, I think, 100.
Yeah.
Right there. Which, by the way, should show you that there isn't really a range cap, like where the guns can't do that much damage, because it does less damage base than Ganora's Axe does, but it has a much higher range. And base, without Roadborne active, it kills at 13 meters. Right, with Roadborne active, I think it kills at 16 meters. So it's pretty insane. Chaperone is one of those guns that I think is right on the cusp. Like, people who are good with Chaperone are really, really, really hard to deal with, especially if they're a Spectral Blades Night Stalker. and they get the wall hacks going on.
Yeah.
I really wish that the wall hacks, since we're on that subject, I really wish they didn't activate. So you notice it's called flawless execution. When it was in development, it was because you had to get a kill without taking any damage to activate it. It didn't have to do with crouching. And the problem was, I think the reason why they changed it is because it was like super annoying in PvP or PvE, because you would activate it like constantly. And it was like kind of frustrating to deal with. So they made it more like you would manually choose to activate it in PvE. And I think they didn't realize how like reliably people would be able to do it in PvP. And it was, I will say that when we were testing it, it was way harder to get. It was a tool for snipers. It was not a tool for shotgunners like it is now.
That's really interesting, because I sort of thought that when they came out with that they just really wanted us to use Take a Knee, and it was really a secret buff to Take a Knee. Like, no, that was sort of my interpretation. I was like, interesting, I have to crouch. I wonder why they want me to crouch. Are they bringing back Guerrilla Fighter, or is this Take a Knee?
I hope not. No, it was a weird, it was always a kind of weird perk, but like what it was used for in testing when I was there was it was for snipers.
Yeah.
Because a sniper was going to be the most likely person who was, oh, and it had to be a headshot kill. So it was like get a headshot kill without taking any damage, flawless execution. And so it was like literally a sniper tool.
Yeah.
And now they have made it to where it's an aggressive tool. Chaperones dominate with it. Slide snipers dominate with it. You know, you pair that with firmly planted in a sniper rifle and you just tear heads off. But, you know, it's so difficult to use that not many people use it well. But the people who do use it well, I feel like verge on abusing it, because it gives them so much power over everyone else. Yeah. And once you get it, they can just keep chaining it because they see where everyone else is. So I personally think that perk needs a rework. I personally think Chaperone is something that people need to keep an eye on, because I've seen how good it can be. And on console specifically, it's a lot easier to use than most people give it credit for. It has a lot of aim assist. It is a very forgiving weapon. And Roadborne active, 16 meters is far. Like, you can kill people at distances that there is no way they thought that you were going to hit them. So if anybody plays with Ghenora's axe and is like, oh, this is pretty nice, try out the Chaperone. The Chaperone's a lot nicer.
Yeah. Maybe that's maybe that's part of the reason they brought it back, is to kind of that exotic has always been strong and has long really not, like, there are people who are good with it, but it's never really been in the spotlight. And I think
a Chaperone meta is my worst nightmare.
Well, that's just because you're a fusion rifle using pacifist.
It is. And it's the shotgun that counters fusion rifles. That's why I hate it. Like, it's, you know, it's crazy, but I've used it myself too. It pairs very nicely with Lunas, or in this case, I guess a Trust is what people are using if they don't have, you know, Lunas.
That's weird, because it has almost as much range as Trust.
Yeah.
Anyway.
At that point, yeah.
We should probably talk about rocket launchers.
Well, Shining Sphere is, if you ever wanted to see the middle of the bell curve rocket launcher, it is Shining Sphere. It has basically average everything. It has almost nothing that is outstanding about it. It just, geez. Pros, literally, it doesn't have a single stat that's above average. It's got average mag size, rate of fire, blast radius, stability, reload speed, handling, and inventory, and below average velocity, but not even really far below average, like just a bit below average. So it's really like the definition of an average rocket launcher. It's an adaptive, and it's a problem because for PvP, high impacts are preferred for the increased blast radius. And for PvE, they're not called rapid fires. I'm going to have to look this up, but it's the faster rate of fire one, the 25 RPM rocket launchers, like Bad Omens, that are preferred because you can get off more shots more quickly when you're standing in a well or behind a rally.
Bad gun. Omens is...
They're called
Bad
aggressives.
Omens is aggressive, yeah.
Yeah, they're called aggressives. So it's the aggressives that are preferred. So adaptives don't have the blast radius of high impacts, like Sins of the Past, Sleepless, Roar the Bear, those are high impacts. It doesn't have the rate of fire of Bad Omens. So what does it really do? Not really a ton. It just kind of is. You know, if you want a more blast radius than a Bad Omens, but a faster rate of fire than a High Impact, you use it. But the problem with that is that the reason you're using those other guns is because of that stat that they're maxed out in. Like, I don't care that my Sleepless has a low rate of fire in PvP. I'm using it because if I land a rocket 10 meters away from someone, it's going to kill them. You know, and I don't care that my Bad Omens has terrible blast radius because I'm trying to fire as many rockets as possible at a single stationary target. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess the question I always kind of have with certain weapon archetypes is, like, how many different types of this gun do we really need? And I feel like Bungie has really thrown a lot of things at the wall in Destiny 2 to see what sticks. And, you know, like, it's great to have a lot of options, but we've got so many options like Shining Sphere that are just sort of irrelevant that I kind of hope that they really narrow the loot pool down going forward and give us more, like, focused options that are meaningful. Like, where we've got a clear dichotomy, a clear choice. Rocket launchers, like, how many different ways really is there to shoot a rocket? Two, maybe three if you want to count tracking as a separate option, if you want to take tracking away from all other rocket types and make it its own thing, which I think the Hake Precisions, boy, I can't talk, sort of were like the beginning of them doing, and then they just sort of gave tracking to everything anyway, and it was just sort of like, well, I don't know why these are different. The Shining Sphere is a perfect example for me of, I mean, it's a drop, right? Like, if you don't have Bad Omens, if you don't have, I'm drawing a blank on the High Impact. Sleepless is what I always see people using, but I feel like there's another one. Sins of the Past.
Or Blue Shift. I don't know why I said Blue Shift. That was one I used back in year one. But yeah, Sins of the Past or Sleepless are the two that most people use.
Like, if you don't have those guns, I mean, it certainly is functional, you know, and I feel like that is the best thing I can say about it, is that it doesn't suck.
There's an entire category of guns in Destiny that, and the problem is that they didn't do a good job of delineating where the rewards came from. So sometimes you have, like, a raid reward that is not super great that is one of these guns, but really, like, there's a niche for guns that are the easiest guns to obtain. But they're not the best guns, but they're great placeholder guns. As you level up, as you improve your character, like, there are exotics that exist in the game that are like that. They're fantastic placeholder exotics. They're great first exotics. The problem is, because they didn't assign these rewards in meaningful enough ways, you end up getting an Iron Banner rocket launcher, which should be one of the best rocket launchers, like Roar the Bear was, and you get Shining Sphere. Shining Sphere should be sold by the Vanguard vendor.
Yeah.
They're sold by the Crucible vendor, come from Gunsmith bounties. Like, that's how that should work. And, you know, similarly, easy exotics, like exotics that aren't that great, should come from Xur, or should come from random world drops, or should come from Gunsmith level ups. Whereas the best exotics should come from Quest, right? Like, that's the way it should be. You should have placeholder weapons that it's like, oh, it's passable. I'm going to use it until I get something better. But if you put a placeholder weapon in an in-game loot pool, then it kind of just automatically invalidates it. It's like, I'm not going to put in a ton of effort to get this thing. It's not very good.
Exactly. You know, I looked at Shining Sphere and I was like, I have so many rocket launchers that are way better than this.
Why am I going to put my Sleepless aside? My Sleepless has, you know, cluster bombs and max blast radius and a bunch of velocity increasing perks. So, like, why am I going to put my Sleepless aside? For Gambit, why am I going to put my Bad Omens aside? I'm not, is what the answer is. But, you know, if you do want it, PvP, volatile launch, try to buff the velocity, or sorry, try to buff the blast radius. So volatile launch, you'll want black powder. You can use rangefinder to buff the velocity, because remember, on projectiles, it increases the projectile speed, and then tracking module just to make it a little bit easier to hit. For PvE, if you want to use it for DPS, you're going to use hard launch to increase the velocity. You're going to use impact casing to increase the direct hit damage, and you're going to use field prep to increase the inventory so you can hold more rounds, and then still tracking module because that's the best. So, you know, I will say it does have fine perks. It has fine perks. You can get a good PvP role. You can get a good DPS role. but 90% of players in this game already have a role that's better, of a rocket launcher that's better. So
yeah, I mean, I didn't have anything bad to say at all about the perks. It has a great selection of perks. It just doesn't stand out when you compare it in terms of like the base, what the gun is. So, but yeah, great options. And I think that pretty much sums it up for the most mediocre rocket launcher in the game. And I think that maybe brings us to the most awesome rocket launcher in the game, Truth.
Yeah, Truth is my new favorite PvP exotic. Previously, so there was a long period of time I didn't use an exotic weapon in PvP, a very long period of time. Outbreak Perfected came out. I swapped Bygones for Outbreak Perfected, and I started running that. Truth has now taken that place. I'm back to my Bygones. Truth is in my heavy slot 100% of the time. It is phenomenal.
You're such a dad.
I am running the absolute dad loadout. I'm pairing it with an Arantel. So, you know, they can just... That's a thing for another for another discussion. But what I will say is that Truth is so far and away the best rocket launcher in the game. Wardcliff Coil is still up there. Wardcliff Coil has the ability to shut down supers a little bit easier than Truth does because it does more damage overall. Truth has aggressive tracking, proximity detonation, which is a perk that they removed from rocket launchers. Gave it to grenade launchers, but removed it from rocket launchers in D2. And on top of that, it holds 3 rounds in the magazine, which is actually weird because the magazine size in the API is listed as 1. So I don't exactly know how it does that. But what is super annoying is that when you pick up a heavy brick on the ground in PvP, meaning you killed someone and they dropped it, it only puts 1 round in the magazine. It doesn't load all of the bricks. You have to manually reload it, which is
that
very
is weird.
Annoying. But Truth, you know, it comes with a base blast radius of 95, but then it has volatile launch, which pushes it up, you know, over 100 if it can go over 100, but it pushes it up to 100 at the very least. And then it has high velocity rounds. So the velocity, which is 47, which is not great to begin with, it's very much a high impact archetype rocket launcher. Low velocity, very high blast radius, but high velocity rounds is the best perk you can have for the mag. That pushes the velocity up by 10. It's got grenades and horseshoes, which is proximity detonation, which is the best rocket launcher perk that has ever existed. And then, you know, as if it needed it, it has composite stock to give you a +5 boost to handling. So, I mean, if you were looking for a PvP exotic, it's pretty much 3 guaranteed kills when you get a heavy brick. Like, the worst thing about it is the fact that because it has proc stat, if someone is jumping up in front of you and you shoot, it will blow up in between you and kill both of you, as opposed to being able to hit the wall behind them or the ground beneath them or something like that. That is the only negative that I can say about it. It's got a good-looking ornament, which I wish I had bought. I bought some silver. I caved. So I told the Bungie guys that I really wanted a Riker Sit emote earlier on in the year. And they made, you know how, if you've watched Star Trek The Next Generation, you know, but like how Riker steps over the back of the seat to sit down because he's tall as fuck and all the seats are really small. So he like steps over the back of the seat and sits down. And I said something to the Bungie guys earlier in the year. And I was like, I would love a Riker Sit emote in Destiny. And they built it. And I was like, you son of a bitch, you got me. And I bought $20 worth of silver and I bought that emote. And so they got me, but also I'm super happy. I mean, you know, we have Eververse changes we're going to talk about in a little bit too, but you know, just the direction that Bungie is going with their game, I'm more than happy to shell out a little bit of money to support them at this current point in time. But so Truth has got a fantastic ornament. It's a great looking gun. If you remember using it in D1, it feels every bit as good as it did in D1. In fact, it feels better because they had nerfed Truth at the end of D1 and crushed the mag size. And it wasn't as good to play with anymore. So it's better than it even was at the end of D1. And I am so happy to have it.
Yeah, I have to say, like number one pro tip for Truth, for people who did not play Destiny 1, get on YouTube and start Googling videos, Destiny, Truth. Watch some montages. This gun is a legend for a reason. The sheer ridiculous things that happen with the tracking on this weapon, like I can't, it's not something I can describe to you on a podcast. It's like if you like fired a rocket straight at the sun and it hit the guy next to you 5 minutes later. Like that, it's so ridiculous. Some of the stuff is just so ridiculous. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you didn't live through it, go watch it. It's pretty hilarious and it's pretty awesome. I'm really happy it's back.
Yeah, me too. And you should definitely get the quest done.
Yeah.
So that's it for weapons. But we do have some
Oh,
Eververse changes like I was
quick,
talking about.
if you're like me and like you don't fully read guides and you just like skim over them to get the gist, and then you just go do stuff, you actually have to walk over the boss's corpse in the menagerie to get the truth quest started. I don't really count that as a spoiler because it's just to even get the quest started, it's not obvious. There's nothing that gives it away. I didn't know that and totally missed it. So I felt like I just had to say that for anybody who's.
Yeah, I think it's like a small item that falls out of the boss, but then it gets like caught in the boss's geometry or whatever. But so I ran through the boss and you like pick it up or whatever. It's like a scrap of parchment or some shit
Yeah,
like that.
totally
But
missed
yeah, so
it.
Eververse, man, Eververse has some great
Yes.
changes coming. I know a lot of people are waiting for like the other shoe to drop with the bad news. But basically they've completely changed the way that Eververse is going to work. So you no longer are going to earn Bright Dust by dismantling stuff that comes from Eververse. You're going to earn Bright Dust through the bounties and through just playing. So playing Crucible, playing Gambit, playing activities, completing activities, you will, I guess, have a chance to earn Bright Dust. That's pretty crazy because right now the only way you earn Bright Dust is you have to. What is it? You just have to get something out of an Engram and then dismantle it.
Yeah.
And they said they wanted to move away from the getting a reward and dismantling the reward to get a currency to pay for another reward. So instead, what it is now is that it's a play to earn reward. It's a reward for completing Vanguard, Crucible, and Gambit bounties. So I'm not sure what the economy is going to look like. I'm not sure how generous they're going to be with it. Hopefully at a similar level to right now, because I get a fair amount of Bright Dust dismantling stuff that I don't want. And I would hate to be getting less because that would feel less rewarding. But the fact that it is now play to earn as opposed to pay to earn is a pretty good feeling.
Speaking of good feelings, the next thing on that Eververse change, the armor, I am so happy about. So here's what it is, right? If you haven't read the article, all of the armor from Eververse that you currently have and in the future is going to stop being armor, and it's going to become a universal ornament that you can apply to, I think, basically any armor set, right? Did I read that correctly? Yeah. So
Yes. Any legendary armor set? Well, hold on.
legendary,
Any
yeah.
Shadowkeep legendary armor set?
Right.
Yeah.
So, and that's huge, because first off, and this is something that they pointed out, all of the perks that you're looking at your Eververse armor, and you're like, well, this looks amazing. The perks are just completely shit and have nothing to do with anything I want. But it's hard to farm that without spending money. And that's just, that does not feel good to have that in front of you as a choice. And so if you're like me, and I think like a lot of people, then you just don't worry about it. Or maybe you try to collect the full set that you like and think, well, maybe I'll wear this to a Destiny party in the tower someday. I don't know. Maybe I'll get lucky and get some good perks. Now you don't have to worry about it. You can just friggin' get the look that you like. And then you can go and get the armor with the perks that you like, and you can apply the Eververse ornament, and it completely overrides the appearance of the armor. It's in essence, it's transmogrification from like World of Warcraft. It's the best of all possible worlds in terms of what they're doing with armor out of Eververse right now. It's got me so excited, so happy. I'm going to be spending Bright Dust to make sure I have a full collection of the Optimacy armor for the Hunter because I really like the way it looks. And yeah, I'm super pumped. I think that is a phenomenally generous and rewarding choice for them to make, and I also think it's really smart because people who do want all of that stuff now have no disincentive to get it. They aren't now going to get stuck with armor that looks great but is not actually great. So I think it's going to A, reward people who aren't going to spend money anyway, and B, it's going to really incentivize people who are considering spending money to actually go ahead and pull the trigger. And it's going to reward people who are going to buy stuff anyway because what they're getting is now better than what it was before. So it's just like a win-win-win. I feel like it's such a good move.
Yeah, I think we saw the beginnings of this when they started putting in legendary ornaments, and they showed us that, other things outside of exotics could be equipped with ornaments. They did it for weapons. But, now I'm looking at it like ornaments have always been one thing that I've been okay with being exclusive to Eververse. I've always 100% been okay with ornaments being come because it makes sense because it's so purely aesthetic and nothing else that it. And it's clearly extra. It's clearly additional. It's not something that came with the game originally. I've been totally okay with it. And I think this, the fact that these are now ornaments for armor, is the best possible thing they could have done for the store and for the armor. And it makes me a lot more likely that I'm going to purchase an ornament for my armor than purchase a piece of armor, like you said, that has perks I don't need. Now, they do want to clarify that the Eververse items are no longer going to dismantle into Bright Dust after September 17th. So if you want to build up your Bright Dust stores, you need to be dismantling everything, before September 17th. After that, it's going to dismantle into, I think, Legendary Shards and Glimmer. So, and you'll
Correct.
also be able to pull them out of the collections with Legendary Shards and Glimmer instead of pulling them out with Bright Dust. So.
Yeah, that's the other half that really I think brings this all together is that now just get the stuff out of your engrams, dismantle it for Bright Dust. It goes into your collections, but then like you said, you don't need the Bright Dust to get it out. So suddenly you can pull out the look that you want very easily. You're just using the same stuff that we're all hoarding anyway. Yeah, I can't not. This is the first time where I'm literally like ranting about how much I like Eververse. I've never felt that positively about it. I've never like disliked it. I've always felt like it was a necessary sort of thing for a game in the modern world. Like it's a way that they can make money for what they're selling, for their art and their hard work. And I respect that, but it was never something I was interested in. And now I'm like, okay, like yeah, show me what you got. Like I haven't pulled the trigger. I haven't bought silver, but this is more likely to make me buy silver than anything they've done in the past.
It was kind of funny, but when I was at Bungie, one of the teams that I had the most confidence in was the Eververse team. They had just brought on a new guy who had experience in MMOs and doing microtransactions. God, and I can't remember what the other game was that he worked on, but it was two really, really huge games before he came over to Eververse. And we went out to lunch with him, and we sat down actually in a decent amount of meetings with him. And we talked about things that as a player didn't feel bad to see in a store. And his vision, like, you could tell he just got it. Like, he understood. And we've been seeing the changes to Eververse. Things have been getting better and better. Like, not all the aesthetic rewards have been locked behind Eververse. Like, Eververse has been more friendly. For the past year, Eververse has basically been optional for anyone who plays the game a lot. Everything they got, they could get for free, pretty much. But the trick is like, even if you can reward stuff for free, like technically I could get anything I wanted for free this season too, just by continuing to dismantle and saving my Bright Dust. I don't want every single item. I want a few items. However, because of the way they have the store set up, where I can just buy something without having to buy an Ingram, I'm totally willing to just drop $20 and just buy it right away because I just want to use it now. I don't want to have to wait for the entire, thing to roll through. I don't want to have to buy it with Bright Dust. It's $6. I'm a working adult. For me, that money is worth it. It's worth it to throw $6 to support my favorite developer and my favorite game, a game that I have thousands of hours into. It's worth it. And I'm okay with doing that. What I was never okay with was buying loot boxes. We'll never support that. So I'm happy with these changes. I'm happy with the direction that Destiny is going. I'm, looking forward to what hopefully is a bright future. And honestly, I hope this new level of like really super open, honest communication that they have with us and this push towards making the experience better for players, even if it doesn't necessarily make them as much money in the short term, without these predatory practices, I hope that is the future that we have in store for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really hope that everybody else out there is seeing this in the same light and is seeing it for what it is, which is something that's really community centric and it's really about Bungie in many ways placing their fate in the hands of those of us who play their game. And that That to me is really encouraging. It's indicative of a confidence and a boldness coming out of them that we haven't really seen. Destiny 2 has felt like it's made a lot of, they've had a lot of missteps, and it's kind of felt like they've had a lot of fear-based steps where they're just sort of scrambling to try to prevent things from going wrong. And I'm really encouraged to see them coming out now, and rather than trying to fix problems, although they still have some problems to fix, they're coming out and they're proactively, like, putting things in place that are good, that are positive for the community, for the game, and that make the whole experience that much more fun and motivate me to keep, you know, to keep spending money and keep supporting them. So I feel like there's been a whole shift in attitude this spring, which is just fantastic.
It is really nice to see. So I think that's it, unless you have anything else to add for this podcast.
I think that brings us to the end of episode 123.
Cool. So we don't have any United States iTunes reviews this week, and our software that we use to update the international reviews is not updated this week. So if there are any international reviews, we will get to you next week when the software updates. In the meantime, remember, guys, if you ever want us to read your review out loud, just leave us a review on iTunes. I guess it's called Apple Podcasts now, and we will read it out with a personal thank you. It doesn't have to be a 5-star review, although we very much appreciate the 5-star reviews. We will respond to any review, and we will either thank you or engage you in conversation or an argument, depending on what type of review it was that you left. But so if you guys want to do that, that would really help us out. And as always, we want to say thank you to our sponsors. We've got Goose and ZenSoCal. They have provided us with a massive, massive service, basically, that allows this podcast to stay ad-free and makes it easy listening for you guys and enables us to do some really, really cool stuff. We've got some super exciting things we're going to do based around Guardian Con. The discounts that we are giving in the store right now that benefit St. Yes. Jude are only the beginning. We have a lot more stuff that we've got planned to do our small part in our contribution for that charity. So,
speaking of, I got to make sure that I plug those here at the end of the podcast. So the number 4, the words "the kids" for the kids is going to be your code for free shipping within the continental United States. If you are outside the continental United States, you're going to want to use for St. Jude. That's for STJUDE, for St. Jude. And that's going to get you 5% off anything in the store. Obviously, patrons, you've already got your own discount code, so feel free to use, you know, whatever gives you the biggest discount if you're a patron. And of course, you know, as a listener as well, use whichever code benefits you the most. We'll be contributing a portion of all revenue to St. Jude, along with a little chip in of our own. And I guess, did you have anything else to add on that front?
No, I mean, pretty much just we're going to do what we did 2 years ago. We're going to yes. take some stuff down to Guardian Con. We're going to get a bunch of stuff signed by some really cool members of the community, maybe by some of the Bungie guys, and we're going to be raffling it away at the after Guardian Con is over. I think we raised $1,500 for St. Jude's the first time we did it. I'd like to see if we can't raise more than that this time. I think the rewards that we're going to give away, number one, there's a lot more of them. Number two, they're a lot better, and also we have even better like minor rewards for people who pledge just really small amounts, whereas before I think we had certain thresholds. So really excited about that. There'll be more information coming in the future. And also, if you guys are at Guardian Con,
yes,
and you happen to see us, we're going to have some really cool Massive Breakdown exclusive stickers to give out. So if you do see us, if you see us wearing our Massive Breakdown shirts, just come over and say what's up, and we'll throw you a sticker so you can throw it on a laptop or a phone or something like that if you feel like you want to advertise the podcast for us.
That's right. I'm psyched to have those stickers to hand out. That's something new for us to be doing. And I'm super psyched about the shirts, man. The shirts, I've got one of the shirts hanging up in my closet because I don't want to wrinkle it. Like it just
I've already
so
been
good.
Wearing it. I've worn it so much. I feel like I might have to buy another one before we go down there, because I've worn it so many times. I'm proud of it. It's a great looking shirt. It is
a really good
Hunter
shirt.
Tri-D or whatever it's called. And
yeah,
you know, for a period of time, my girlfriend adopted as her sleeping shirt. I was like, babe, this isn't a sleeping in shirt. This is a wearing out shirt. Like, this is a shirt we wear when we go places. This is a nice shirt. So I'm really happy about it. I'm going to pick up 2 more shirts for myself. So we'll have our Massive Breakdown gear on the whole time down at Guardian Con. So if you see either one of us, you know, don't hesitate to walk over and say what's up and just, you know, chat with us for a little bit. You can also always hit me up on Twitter If you hop into the Discord, I answer any and all tags in Discord as quick as I possibly can. So we're going to be there. We'll be there Friday afternoon, all of Saturday, and then Sunday morning as well. So,
yep. Yeah, going to be a good time. All right. Well, I think that really does bring us to the end of episode 123 of the Massive Breakdown podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Later, y'all.
Peace.